Welcome to the Congressional Awards Foundation podcast, Elevating DC Youth, a collaboration between the Office of Cable Television, Film, Music, and Entertainment, and the Congressional Award Foundation. This podcast is intended to help guide DC students through the opportunities the Congressional Award Program offers and provide information on how to explore the Congressional Award Program's pathways to career goals.
Hello, and welcome to the Congressional Award Podcast, Elevating DC Youth. I am Temitayo Adeola from the Congressional Award and Deanwood Radio Broadcast Network, and I will be one of your co-hosts today.
Hi, I'm Jasmine Smith from the Congressional Award and Deanwood Radio Broadcasting Center, and I will be your other co-host for today.
I have been with the program for close to 2 years now, and I'm currently a freshman at Columbia University. Today, let's meet our guest, Dr. Jing Axius. He is an accomplished leader and innovator in health equity, longevity, health system transformations, and building equitable systems so that every person in every community can live a longer, healthier, and more productive life. As president and CEO of Creating Healthier Communities, also known as CHC, Jing leads a high-performing team that is dedicated to breaking down the barriers to health and empowering communities to thrive. With business acumen and deep experience across sectors, Dr. Axius understands how to develop economic and creative advantages for addressing disparities. He has a proven track of collaborating across public, private, and nonprofit sectors to accelerate the pace of change.
He is a sought-after author and speaker and is regularly featured in outlets including the New York Times, the Boston Globe, Forbes, Time Magazine, and Politico. He has facilitated sessions at the World Economic Forum in Davos and has engaged hundreds of leaders across industries and sectors at the United Nations. Under his leadership, his previous team's signature program, Growing with Age, was recognized as part of the Fast Company World Changing Ideas program. Dr. Axius has been long passionate about equity, the contributions of women to society, and improving the world around him. He was raised from infancy to the age of four by his grandmother in Haiti. Her hard work and dedication has inspired his career path to this day. Dr. Axius is a certified director with the National Association of Corporate Directors, a fellow with the Executive Leadership Council, a graduate of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health Program on Health Reform, and Stanford University's Graduate School of Business Corporate Innovation Program. He holds a bachelor's and master's degree from Florida State University and a PhD from American University School of Public Affairs. Today's topic is career growth and sustainability practices from CEO perspective with Dr. Jing Axius. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be with both of you today, Temitayo and Jasmine. I cannot tell you how excited I am to be having this conversation with the two of you.
Thank you so much for being here today. My first question for you today would be, can you walk us through your educational journey and what has led you to where you are today?
Well, thank you so much for that question. So I was raised by my grandmother for the first 4 years of my life. I am a Haitian, and I grew up in Haiti for the first 4 years. And I saw, and my grandmother made the hard choice to really, she sacrificed quite a bit to ensure that I had an education. So she, in her older age, she's now 97 and has dementia, but she made the decision many decades ago that she would go ahead and take me under her wings. And that she actually went back and started to work. So she would wake up early in the mornings and she would go to the market and she would work and sell products until the sunset. So sunrise, she was out the house. Sunset, she was coming back just so I could actually have some education. When I came to this country, my family instilled in me the strong value and need to have education. I was told that people can take so many things away from you. Education is one thing they cannot. Once you have read or you have exposed yourself to a new way of thinking, that is very difficult for someone to try to take that away from you. And that education actually provides you with a set of opportunities. For me, I was always driven by always wanting to be better because my environment oftentimes signaled that in many ways that I did not matter. And I came from a family that basically said, know your worth, know that you're strong. And even though you may have limited resources, one thing that you do have is faith. One thing that you do have is the belief in a much stronger power. And one thing that you have is your history. As a person of color, particularly in the United States, we have been through a lot. And many of those who have come before us were exposed to things that were even harsher than what we might be experiencing today. And they were able to accomplish a lot with very little. So the fact that I come from a history, and the fact that we come from a history of strong change makers and people who never accepted the status quo, that was a driving factor in me pursuing my educational pursuits, because I knew that once I was exposed to certain levels of education, that I had the critical skills and also the tools to be able to write my own destiny. And I've always wanted to be in a position where I had a range of options in order to be able to make the choices that I've been so blessed and fortunate to make.
Thank you for that answer.
Dr. Axius, thank you again for joining us. It really does impact someone when they have a wise and loving grandmother in their life. What do you want to say to your grandmother after your success?
Wow, Jasmine, that's such a profound question. So my grandmother is 97 years old. She has dementia. And most recently, she was in a hospital for about a week and a half. And the doctors informed us that she would need to go into hospice. So we did make the decision that she would actually spend the rest of her days at home. So that's a very timely question, Jasmine, in part because of the fact that she really instilled in me so much. So for me, what I would say is how grateful that I am to her for giving me the social support and the foundation, particularly at such an early age, to be able to believe in myself, to never take no as a final answer, and to persevere despite what others might think of you or say about you. So it's one of deep gratitude, and one in which that I am a product of her, that I am a legacy of hers. And for me, my goal is to continue to work hard. My goal is to continue to give back, is to contribute, is to continue to pay it forward, because I fundamentally believe at my deepest core that by doing that, that I'm honoring her. So if anything, it is for every time I walked across the stage or for every time I've been able to accomplish something, it's really a nod to her, because there, by the grace of God, it could have gone another way. And if it not been for her, I would not be where I am today. So it's one of gratitude. It's one of honoring her and her legacy. It's one of giving and paying it forward, because for me, Jasmine, the goal is not to be successful. I mean, I used to think about success like that, the next job, the next accolade, the next promotion. And I think, especially after what we've been through over the last couple of years and what we go through on a day-to-day basis, the goal for me has been to shift from what success is, or at least how it is typically defined by what you have, what you get, what you accomplish, to more in terms of exactly significance, which is how am I really benefiting the life of other people? If I can be from a position of service, that to me is much more valuable than the next promotion or the next job. Now, don't get me wrong, those next promotions and those next jobs come with some increases in pay, and we all got to eat and live a dignified life, however you define it. But for me, it's just that I've really kind of tried to pivot from focusing so much on myself, which I think sometimes when people talk about success, it's like, look at me, to kind of think about significance, which is, what am I doing for other people? And I think that is what my grandmother did for me. She had very little, but hopefully she can look at me and her other grandkids and say, I've accomplished a lot. You're not going to have me cry, Jasmine. We're going to have fun on this podcast.
As someone who was always on the road and like attending meetings and business, attending to like different business obligations or administrative tasks, how do you manage your work-life balance with your personal life?
That is an excellent question. One of the things that I've done as of late is really try to balance more work-life balance. You know, for me, there was a point in time where it was a lot of work. Then I went from work to work. I never believed in work-life balance, you know, in part because of the fact that, you know, I don't know what balance means. Is it 50-50? Is that what we're talking about when we say balance? Or is it more so work-life integration? Meaning the fact that if you focus on what you love to do, then it just becomes part of your life and not to compartmentalize it. So that has always been my journey, is the fact that I am a service-minded, mission-driven leader. always thinking about service and mission. So the work that I do is actually very fundamental to who I am as a leader. So what I've done over the last couple of years, because as leaders, similar to like everyone else, have challenges. I've had to support teams through the pandemic. I've had to support teams who had lost personal family members, whether it's because of COVID or because of illness. I lost my bonus mom on her birthday in August of 2020, while also managing a team and trying to compartmentalize exactly all of those different things, which after a while becomes very unsustainable. So I think as we start to evolve out of this pandemic, one of the key lessons I've learned about myself is to give myself a little bit of grace and a little bit of space. So, for example, I think about total well-being, which also includes your mental health and how are you showing up, even for yourself. So I'm at a major conference here on the West Coast this week. And there's been times where I would just do that internal check with myself and say, okay, Gene, how are you feeling right now? And if I need to kind of step away and recharge, because I'm an introvert, by the way, then I have stepped away and recharge, or I go for a walk and take a breather. So I think part of work-life balance is also prioritizing those things and those people that matter. So I'm a father. I have two beautiful young kids, and I'm also a husband. And I think there's a point in my career trajectory where I may have kind of emphasized work more than I emphasized spending quality time with my family. And I think that as we continue to evolve and grow, I've actually started to pivot and spend as much more quality time with my family and try to find that balance, if you will. And I think trying to find balance is a daily intentional choice. And then also creating a system whereby you are prioritizing your overall well-being, which also means connections, connection with family, connection with friends. So for me, I don't work on weekends. We have a 4-day work week that I am looking forward to fully enjoying one day as a CEO. Not happening right now, but that's okay. I spend time actually not trying to feel guilty if I'm watching a TV show when I should be doing something else. I'm just taking that time for me, or picking up a book and just reading it just for the purpose of leisure. You know, so whatever those things are that brings you joy, I would say that you try to embed that in your day-to-day life, and that, you know, try to focus on, I know it's a cliche, but if you really focus on doing what you love, the work will come, and then it won't necessarily feel like work. And I think I'm a perfect example of that. What I do is part of who I am, and it focuses on activism and equity and really trying to do something to better the lives of people and communities across this country. That's just who I am. So for me, it's just trying to find those moments of joy and focusing on those things and those people that matter to me as part of my day-to-day.
Wow. Thank you for that awesome answer. We'll have more to talk about with our guest in a moment, and we'll be right back for after a brief break.
DC Radio mobile app.
It's the brand new DC Radio mobile app. Now you can hear your favorite DC radio programs whenever and wherever you go. Listen on your iPhone, iPad, or Android phone. It's free and easy to download.
Just click on the iPhone or the Android icons at the bottom of our webpage at dcradio.gov
and take DC Radio everywhere. Listen live or listen on demand to DC Radio in DC, for DC, 96.3 HD4 and dcradio.gov.
Welcome back again to the Congressional Award Podcast, Elevating DC Youth. I'm your host, Tim Mattio, once again. And on our segment today is Dr. Gene Axius. Thank you once again for joining us. As somebody who works in healthcare, there can be challenges that come with having an administrative role. What has been the most challenging and also rewarding part of your career?
Well, Tim Mattio, I really appreciate that question. For me, the most challenging has been trying to get people to, people broadly speaking, to reimagine how we can deliver better healthcare across the country with new and innovative tools. Sometimes what we've been doing becomes the reference point for what we should be doing moving forward. And I think we need to inject greater innovation, particularly in addressing the issues around healthcare. I'll give you a perfect example of this. One of the things that we are working on at Creating Healthier Communities is really coming up with ways where we can close the gaps in terms of life expectancy. So there's a nearly a 30-decade life difference depending on where you live in D.C. If you're a resident in Georgetown, you can potentially live to be about 94 years old. If you live in Anacostia, which is just a couple of miles down the road, your life expectancy is 67. Think about it. Same area, different neighborhoods, a few miles apart, nearly 30 years worth of lost life. We should all be outraged by that. So how do we start to fix that? Because that's not necessarily a new problem. What it does require is innovative solutions. So the challenge has been really getting people to think outside the box, to infuse innovation, and also to think about how we can bring different partners together to solve these big issues, because it impacts every industry, it impacts every business, and it impacts every community. The most rewarding has been, for me, the opportunity to be instrumental in helping to advance the Affordable Care Act under the Obama administration, and then to spend 2 years implementing some of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So having an opportunity to create programs that impacted the lives of millions of people. And then I came back to AARP, and in 2017, I was very instrumental in leading a team and defending the Affordable Care Act, particularly the Medicaid program, which serves nearly 70 million people. So for me, I'm really excited about my role in helping to lead major efforts to preserve access to healthcare, particularly for vulnerable populations.
Dr. Axius, are you also working on or considering working on any health and wellness projects in your home country, Haiti, as well as your work here?
So that is an excellent question. And the answer is yes, that many of the inequities that we see, particularly in the U.S., also have global implications. And being someone who was born in Haiti and being Haitian myself, I have a growing interest in figuring out ways where we can actually be much more intentional about addressing some of the health issues, particularly facing the people of Haiti. And then working with reputable, trustworthy institutions and leaders to think about how we go about doing that.
Thank you for that great answer. We'll have more to talk about briefly. We'll also be going on another short break, and we'll be back in a moment.
DC Radio. DC Radio, where you can hear the Brazilian Hour.
He was a singer, guitarist, songwriter, actor, and painter, active for more than 70 years.
The Putumayo World Music Hour with Rosalie Howarth.
He has an international fan base that continues to appreciate his beautiful voice and songs.
And Memories for Seniors with Elliot Michael Gold. In DC, for DC. DC Radio, 96.3 HD4 and DCRadio.gov.
Welcome back again to the Congressional Award Podcast, Elevating DC Youths. We have Mr. Dr. Axius with us today. My question for you in this segment would be, what advice would you give to a young teenager who is either in high school or about to go to college, who wants to pursue a career in healthcare administration or public health or any or that kind of sector?
It's two things. The first one is know that you are enough. Know that you are enough. Oftentimes, we either doubt ourselves because of our surroundings, or we let other external factors impact and influence our potential. So having a deep felt belief that you are enough is critically important. The second thing is that your lived experience matters, particularly as it relates to health and healthcare and the healthcare system in the U.S. So many companies and organizations talk about lived experience of the patient, but oftentimes don't know exactly how to translate that in terms of service delivery. So the first one is know that you are enough. Second, know that your lived experience matters, and it demonstrates, studies actually demonstrate that when you have diverse doctors and medical professionals and public health analysts, that particularly in their respective communities, those populations tend to be even healthier, right? So know that you're enough and your lived experience matter, and that you can actually change the healthcare system, the way healthcare is delivered in this country, to ensure that every person in every neighborhood has an opportunity to live a longer, healthier, and more productive life.
Thank you.
Dr. Axius, you have an article titled, America Must Invest in Its Next Generation. As a member of the next generation, what advice do you have for myself and my peers on how we can take control of our health and wellness, even business-wise?
We're seeing that already, Jasmine. This generation is not waiting to be asked for permission. So that is the first and foremost thing is that for this generation is that there is a range of tools and resources available literally at your fingertips. And that there's a lot of insights out there that you can leverage. So my advice is to really just go out there and challenge the status quo. And just because it is something that may seem normative does not necessarily mean that it is transformative. And that as the young leaders of today and the leaders who are going to be running many of these institutions in the future is to really think about exactly how has these systems impacted your overall health? And how do you take the lived experience and really transform the system to ensure that it's meeting you where you are? There's a lot of issues that's impacting all communities and all populations, and stress and anxiety and mental health are key elements. And I think that there's a lot that we can actually learn from this generation of leaders in terms of exactly how do we design systems that are really more patient-centered, that really focus on your individual needs and preferences and puts you in the driver's seat of your own destiny.
My next question for you, which is a bit of a personal and funny question, would be, after a long day of work and a long day of administrative tasks, what is your favorite Haitian food to come home to?
I love that question. So lately, I've actually been having some fried red snapper with brown rice and fried plantains. I see you, Jasmine. And it's something called pickles, which is kind of like a handmade type of pepper. So that's somewhat of a comfort food for me. My daughter, who is 9 years old, she actually, on her own, unprompted by me, decided to make her research project in the third grade on Haiti. And she is all about the Haitian soup, which is kind of like a pumpkin soup. But we typically have that during New Year's Day. But that's been my comfort food as of late. Now, I'm going to ask you the same question. I don't know if that's going off script. What is yours?
I'm Nigerian by birth also. So my favorite, this sounds so cliche, it's jollof rice.
Okay.
a nice little jollof rice with plantains on the side does it for me.
And what about you, Jasmine?
My mom, I love when she makes curry chicken and jerk chicken with the potatoes. Oh my gosh, I just love it. I can't stay out the kitchen while she's cooking.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Love both of those answers.
How helpful has the United Nations been in assisting your health and wellness mission? I know that you've talked with them and you've been spreading your message and your mission there.
Yeah. No, so that's an excellent question, Jasmine. So the United Nations has something called as Sustainable Development Goals. And one of the Sustainable Development Goals is around health and wellness. And I think one of the things that we've seen is the fact that while many countries were making progress in terms of addressing health, the pandemic really pushed a lot of that back by several years, if not decades. The other thing that we're also seeing is the fact that particularly in a lot of countries, you're seeing an increase in longevity, in terms of how long people are living. However, in the United States, we've actually lost several years of life expectancy because of so many factors like opioid, gun violence, COVID, racism, have actually cut our life expectancy short. The other thing I would mention is the fact that even in those countries where you're seeing people living longer, those additional years of life are not comprised of people being healthy. So in other words, people are living longer, but they're living longer with disease and chronic conditions. So working with the United Nations has been very helpful in helping us kind of think about what's the role of government and what's the role of the private sector, what's the role of NGOs, and working collectively together to really kind of solve all of those issues. Because a healthier community means healthier residents, which means healthier workers, which means more resilient businesses, which means a greater and stronger economy. So no country can be competitive long-term if the populations they serve are not healthy and contributing in a very meaningful way. And in fact, one can argue that if countries do not focus on the health of their populations, it becomes a national security issue, as well as an economic crisis, as well as a health crisis. So really just making those connections are critically important. And the United Nations in particular has been leading the charge along with the World Health Organization. And it aligns very well with our focus at creating healthy communities, because at the end of the day, everything happens at the local level.
Thank you for that answer. My last and final question for you would be, where do you see the future of healthcare of the United States in 5-10 years or more?
So right now, the United States, relative to other industrialized countries, we spend more, but we get the worst outcomes, right? So we spend more on healthcare than most of our peers, and yet our outcomes are not as are not better. So I do think that we have to focus on the triple aims in terms of better population health. Again, focusing on how can we make sure that our communities are healthy? How can we ensure that as individuals that we're healthy, that we are also focused on addressing the cost of healthcare in this country? It is so expensive, even if you have insurance, but God forbid if you don't, if you're uninsured. I mean, it's just astronomical. So we have a situation we have, even with the amazing passage of the Affordable Care Act, we still have millions of people who are uninsured or underinsured. So I hope within the next 5 to 10 years that we have way more people actually getting adequate health coverage and then also getting adequate and accessible access to high quality healthcare and doing it in a way that is actually meeting their unique needs and preferences.
Thank you so much for that answer. It was great having you today. Thank you for being a guest. Thanks to everyone listening to the Congressional Award Podcast. I am Temitayo Adeola.
I'm Jasmine Smith.
And have a great day.
You've been listening to the Congressional Awards Foundation Podcast, Elevating DC Youth. The Congressional Awards Foundation Podcast, Elevating DC Youth, is a collaboration between the Office of Cable Television, Film, Music, and Entertainment and the Congressional Award Foundation. For more information about the Congressional Award Foundation, visit congressionalaward.org.